Welcome to Vogel Voices, a podcast put on by Vogel, which is a nonprofit here in Dallas, Texas. The purpose of the podcast is really to explain the impact that Vogel has on homeless children and their families here in Dallas. For the past 37 years, Vogel Alcove has served approximately 18,000 children and their families that have come through our doors. Our mission is to help young children and their families prevent and overcome the traumatic effects of homelessness and poverty. We do this through our main programs, which include early childhood education, health programs. We have a health clinic on site. We also have a family support program. We have a mental health program. And then we do family support activities with our families in our Parent Opportunity Center. We implement these programs literally all across the Metroplex. We have for 37 years just had one site, but we're excited that we now have opened three sites or in the process of opening three sites. Our main site is located near downtown Dallas, and we call it our main site. We have about 134 children there. We also add another 50 during summer for a summer camp. We also have recently, at the beginning of this year, opened our north location, which is an emergency family shelter where the families actually live there, and we provide child care on the first floor. And there's about 50 children in that site. And then we're excited to be able to open another site in southern Dallas, which will be near Redbird, the shops at Redbird. And that site will serve about 134 kids. I am Karen Hughes, the president and CEO of Vogel for the past 13 years, and I'm going to be the host today of our podcast. My entire career has been devoted to early childhood, quality early childhood education, and nonprofit management. However, it wasn't until literally 14 years ago when I went to Ethiopia and adopted my young son, Noah, who was two at the time, from a care center in Ethiopia, that I really committed myself to working with children in trauma. And out of that commitment came my being willing to accept the position and moving back to Texas to take the role as CEO of Vogel at that time as we work with homeless children and their families. But it's been a journey. I thought I knew a lot about quality early childhood education until I started doing working with homeless children. And it has been a learning experience from the first day I got here. And it's still a learning experience today. But I'm excited today to be able to be joined today with two members of my executive team. Dr. Morgan Wilson is our Senior Director of Early Childhood Programming, and Kim Holmes is my Chief Program Officer. So thank you, Morgan and Kim, for being here today. And also, can you tell us a little about yourself and how long you've been with Vogel and what you do there and what your role is? So Morgan, you want to do it first?
Absolutely. Thank you, Karen. I'm really happy to be here and have the opportunity to share with you what we do at Vogel for early childhood. I have nearly 30 years of experience in the field of education. I have worked in both the public and private school sector as both an educator and administrator. With that experience, I also worked for two of the largest Head Start grantees in the state of Ohio, which was expanding my passion for working with under-resourced communities prior to moving to Texas. So currently, I serve as the Senior Director of Early Childhood Programs at Vogel, and I've been there for a year, so I just completed my first year. I currently have my Doctorate of Education in Educational Leadership from Liberty University. I have a Master's degree in Education, Teaching and Learning. I also have a Bachelor's degree in Religion and Family and Consumer Science. I am a degree collector, by the way. I have an Associate's degree in Marketing, and I also have a Professional Paralegal Certification in Criminal Law. And I'm currently in law school, completing my postdoctoral executive certification in Law and Public Policy. So that so, is
as
what
you
I
can
with.
Tell, she's not real qualified for the role that we have for her. So we're very excited about that. So, Kim?
Yes, thank you, Karen. I am truly excited to be here to share in this message that we're getting out to others. Not as extensive as Dr. Wilson here, but been in social work for over 30 years now. I currently hold a master's degree in social work and I am a licensed master level social worker. I've had the pleasure of actually working in different gamuts of social work. I mean, I've worked for Child Protective Services. I've done the foster care. So I've had the experience of kind of putting my hands in a lot of different areas when it comes to social work, but also maintaining the integrity of what I wanted to do and where my passion was, is to have a voice for the voiceless. But for Vogel, I've been here almost 5 years. It'll be 5 years in June. And I've had the pleasure of kind of building on and increasing our programming at Vogel. I started off there as the director of family support, and work with a wonderful group of social workers that I led at that time to build our programming and get it to where we needed to be to service those children and families that we work with. As we've expanded, I've been able to walk hand in hand with Karen as we've gone through the expansion process of opening up our new centers with our North location and also the expansion with our Redbird location. So a lot of great things that have happened. I'm so excited about this whole process of doing that and being a part of that to service more children and families.
Well, as most of you know, the foundation of everything we do every single day is based on trauma responsive care. You know, there's a lot of buzzwords around and people talk about trauma-informed care, but Vogel kind of took a different route on that. We call it trauma-responsive care, and that's going to be our topic today as we kind of break that down. And I really want us to talk about what is trauma, because a lot of times when people think about trauma, they think about maybe somebody's in a car wreck or they have cancer or there's some traumatic thing happened. But so many things with trauma you don't see, but yet they cause trauma in children. And so we're going to talk about what is trauma, and then really how does Vogel respond to trauma? And I think this is what sets us apart, because we're not just informed about it. We actually respond in a certain way with the children that we serve. In fact, as you all know, we just recently read the book that's called What Happened to You? Because with a lot of kids in trauma, many times people ask, well, what's wrong with you? The real question should be asked is, what happened to you? And it's that the answer to that question is what really is how Vogel responds to children in trauma. And then, of course, you have to have the right staff to provide the care and be the caregivers for these children. And so we'll talk a little bit about what the role of the caregiver is. And then also, how do we take care of them? Because that is it's a really hard job to work with kids, that many kids. There's a lot of programs in town that may have a few homeless children. Vogel is unique in everything that it does. And number one is that 100% of the kids that walk through the doors are homeless. So let's talk about trauma first. So we're going to talk about really what is it and how does it really affect children's growth and development? And how does it manifest even later in adults? Because it doesn't go away if it's not addressed. Research has really shown us that, you know, adverse childhood experiences can have a lifelong impact on people. And the more of these issues that one person has, the more traumatic their life is and the more damage that can be done, especially with young children. And so some of those things are physical abuse, emotional abuse. It could be sexual abuse, physical neglect and emotional neglect, mental illness in family members, divorce, substance abuse in the environment, violence against your mother, and having a relative who has been sent or to jail or in person. And like I said, the more instances of these. But I think the other thing that's important for everybody that's listening today to realize, this isn't just about kids in poverty. There are children, no matter what economic level, that actually have these trauma experiences. And yet many times they're not addressed. So all the children that walk through Vogel's doors every day, they have to be homeless when they first come to us. So that means that they are living in an emergency shelter. They could be living in a transitional housing program. They could be actually living in their car. They could also be from a domestic violence shelter. A lot of the kids that we service and serve are from domestic violence. And I think there's a lot of people in the community that understand that there's domestic violence, and then they understand there's homelessness, but a lot of times they don't put those together. And some of the moms that we work with every day, when they actually decided to finally leave an abusive situation, they were in fact making a decision to have their children be homeless. And so that's a big, big factor as well. But then some of them could be doubled up with friends, which, yes, they have a roof over their heads, but their children may be sleeping on the floor, they're sleeping on a couch, or they're sharing a room with somebody else. And then after a week or so, it's time to pack all my stuff up and go somewhere else because we've worn out our welcome here. And or they could be living in hotels and they're doing it day by day by day. And the children really don't even know what's where they're going to be the next day. So those are the kids and some of the kids that I mentioned that have come to Vogel. They actually have come to us from being living in a car. Morgan, I want to start with you. So given all of that, what types of trauma do we experience mostly with the children, and how does this really show up in a child's brain development in these early years?
Absolutely. So some of the main types of trauma that our children are dealing with is, number one, neglect. Families are coming to us in a very unstable situation, and they're trying to figure out where they're going to stay for that night or the next day. They're trying to figure out how they're going to feed their children. And so some things may fall by the wayside, not intentionally, but just because they have different priorities as far as survival go. So neglect is one of the big ones. Physical abuse, the lack of resources, sexual abuse has been playing a big part in some of our children as well. And so the way we're seeing the kids come in is it's affecting their development with significant delays. So if a family is staying in a shelter or a hotel room and they have an infant, they will not necessarily put their infant down on the ground because it's dirty or it's concrete. So those babies are lacking that tummy time. They're failing to learn how to crawl, which is also delaying when they walk. Nutrition is a big thing. So maybe they're not getting balanced nutrition. They're only getting what they have provided at the shelter or shelf-stable items, and it's not a complete meal. And so our kids are coming in not being able to eat that balanced meal. So they have texture issues. They need food therapy because they don't know how to eat a strawberry or a cantaloupe. And those are the nutritious things that we provide for our kids. So they'll get food therapy. Another big thing is the social emotional aspect, right? And so if a child is in a shelter, or a hotel, they're not really getting those interactions that you would on a daily basis if you had that stable home life. And so social emotional care for our kids is number one. So we're trying to build those relationships with them. The trust is really, really important. A lot of our families come in and they don't trust us because of everything that they're experiencing. And so building that trust with the parent and the child is a priority for our kids.
Well, and I think also a lot of people, if you really have done any study on brain development, will say that, you know, the brain is not ready when you're born. And a lot of people don't realize that. It's the only organ in the body that literally isn't ready. And it's only gets ready through interactions with people. And if those synapses are not being built in the brain because of the interaction, and maybe you're dealing with a mom that's totally depressed or a mom that herself is struggling, there's not going to be that bonding and that interaction. So therefore, those connections in the brain do not get created. And as we'll talk about a little later, with some of those things, there is a window of opportunity. And if you miss that window, it's going to affect their development their whole lives. And so we'll talk about that a little bit later. But Kim, I just mentioned the moms. So they also are dealing with trauma, and many of them have dealt with trauma their whole lives. So can you talk a little bit about that and how we see that as the moms actually come?
Absolutely.
I say moms, and we do have some dads. You know, 98% of the people that we deal with are single moms, but even though we do have some dads, so a lot of times I'll say moms, but it means parents.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, just to piggyback off of what Dr. Wilson mentioned, you know, our families are coming to us at their lowest, at the point that they're enrolled with us. Some of the things that we're seeing is we've had parents that have gone through trauma that they've not been able to get past their issues. So we see a lot of them coming in very depressed. We're pulling back layers and layers and layers of things, and it takes a long time to do that, but they're not very trusting. of others because they've not had that for themselves in the past. We see a lot of substance abuse. We see a lot of families that are self-medicating because they are such in this state of trauma that they just want something to make them feel better. And they think that the alcohol and drugs is the way to go. But we see a lot of mood dysregulation that they don't know how to respond to a simple how you doing request or come in and talk to your social worker. It's difficult for them to kind of build off of skill building. They lack the skills necessary to interact with other people. So a lot of things that they've experienced as children themselves, they're bringing it along with them as they're trying to parent for their kids. They love their children. They're doing the best they can, but they need some additional tools and resources and support. And Vogel for them is their safe space. And we try to make it a safe space for them where they're able to process and talk about their feelings and encourage them that just because you're in this situation doesn't mean this is the end for you. So we see a lot of those things that are, it appeared to be negative, and we just have to help those parents get past those feelings that they're exhibiting.
And I think we've seen, even with the new North location, kind of a different kind of response, because those families, whereas at the main location, as I mentioned, they have to be homeless when they come in. But then after we work with them and help them get housing and jobs, they stay till their kids go to kindergarten. So on a given day, half of them are virtually homeless, half are recovering from homelessness. And if you look at both sides of that, they each have individual needs. Sometimes the ones that are working on recovering from homelessness have bigger needs because they're actually out in the community. So all those stressors that you can kind of protect from in a shelter, you know, the physical elements and all of that, but you get them out in an apartment where violence is all around them. Weird, different kind of people are coming in and out that these children don't know. And so it's a whole different ball game. And then we've seen also, like at our North location, how protective they are of their children when they come into shelter, because many of them are coming from living in a house and they're now coming into shelter because while we don't run the shelter, they live there. And those moms are keeping those kids close because they're afraid. And then they're also dealing with a lot of things. I was up there just Friday and a new family had moved in. They were telling us about they were coming, and it was a young couple, and they just had their baby that was 26 weeks, delivered at 26 weeks. And then she lived for 2 weeks and they had just had the funeral for the baby. And so when they were trying to talk to them, there was literally no affect, because they had totally retreated. And so it's that kind of trauma that's adults. And so even if you can imagine how hard that is to deal with adults, when you're dealing with children, it even gets even more compounded because they don't know. Therefore, our response to everything we do is, like I just mentioned about the brain, everything we do is brain-based. And it shows us that healthy brain development, like I said, in trauma do not mix. You can literally look at a PET scan of a child that is under trauma and a PET scan of a child that is not in trauma, the brains look totally different. They're totally organized differently. And so what we do is we have to then take that window of opportunity to say, we got to rewire some of this because of the way that it needs to be wired. So we know that, again, that there's a small window of opportunity, and for certain skills, that window is shorter and shorter, and literally it can't be redone. There are some things that can be redone, but I always used to use the example of, if you've ever had to put in a irrigation system in your yard or sprinkler system, it would have been a lot easier had they laid that down before you put all the sod and everything down. But that's the same thing the brain works. So if we can get it right the first time, you can technically rewire some of these social emotional, but like you said, even with adults, they didn't deal with it, so now we're having to redo it then. And so the more we can do in the early years, the better off we are. So because all of this can alter how a child works, because I am convinced, and the research shows this very clearly, that if we can change the life of one of these children in the first 3 years, not their long term, not when they go to school, I'm talking the first 3 years of life, we will literally change their life forever. So the work we're doing is extremely important. And because of that, you have to have really a basic of quality early childhood education. So it's not just early childhood. It's quality early childhood. And what does that mean? So we are an NAYC accredited program. Only about 8% of the programs in the whole country receive that accreditation. We also receive Head Start and early Head Start funding. So that means we have to meet all the 2000, literally, regulations for the federal government. We also are a level 4 TRS Rising Star program in the state of Texas. And we also meet TEA requirements for our pre-K partnership program with the school district. So it is a very quality program. But Morgan, you've said that while there's other programs in town that in the country that do these kind of things when it comes to quality, you use the term that I love to use, which is that you say that we're the unicorn of early childhood programs. And so can you talk to me a little bit about what does Vogel do differently than most early childhood programs in just in order for us to be responsive to the kids that are in trauma?
Sure. I really do believe that we are the unicorn of early childhood because we do things so completely different. I've worked in several other high quality programs in other parts of the country. And when I came here to Vogel, I knew it was different. Our approach is different in that we're meeting the children right where they are as soon as they come into the building. We're not having these outrageous expectations for any child that comes into our building. We don't expect them to know their ABCs and 1-2-3s before they come in. We don't expect them to be able to self-regulate their emotions and their behavior before they come in the door. We're truly meeting them with the trauma that they're bringing with them, and we're starting with meeting the basic needs first. That is critically important. That is the biggest part of the pyramid model, meeting those basic needs. So our kids get a full belly when they come into our building. We make sure that it's a nutritious, well-balanced breakfast and lunch, and almost like a second lunch when they wake up from nap. And then they leave the center with a bye-bye bag that has non-perishable food items. We think it's critically important that they have full bellies. That's number one. Number two, we are their safe place. We take our time to build those relationships and make sure that they trust us. And so being that safe place means that they can finally rest. They can sleep. And so we don't put limitations on how long they take a nap for because we want them to be able to get that sleep that they're not getting when they leave our building. And finally, the other piece is the social emotional piece. We focus on meeting those social emotional needs first because that is what they need. They need to know that they are loved, that they are supported, and that no matter what and no matter the behavior, we're still going to be there. So we're offering that stability to our children. Those things are what makes us different. The ABCs and 1-2-3s, they come eventually, but we take that time to invest in those children for the relationship piece and building that trust. That's why we're different.
And I think you mentioned about the ABCs and the 1-2-3s. The one thing that a lot of people think, well, then y'all don't look at outcomes and whatever, but we actually do. We actually screen all the children when they enter to see where they are developmentally versus where they should be. And then on a quarterly basis, we monitor that so that the teachers can adjust that in the classroom from what the children actually need. But with our four-year-olds and five that are going to kindergarten, we actually give them the same assessment that's given by Dallas ISD when they get there. And the average child that Dallas ISD sees is roughly 45% are considered kindergarten ready. 75 to 80% year after year after year of Vogel kids are kindergarten ready. So it doesn't mean that we do not do academics. We just meet their needs first, which makes their brains work, which then are able to do it. And that's very, very important for people to understand. So, Kim, moms and dads have brains too. And, you know, sometimes due to homelessness, they're not necessarily functioning in their executive functioning part of the brain, which is the front part of the brain. A lot of people don't realize that. And for some people, it doesn't even get developed until you're 20, 21. So for those of you that are dealing with teenagers wondering why they are the way they are, it's because their brain's still developing the executive functioning. So we deal with this a lot with parents and decisions that they make. And I know you and I've talked about this with, you know, most of us when we wake up in the morning, if we were to go outside and our car didn't start that morning, the first thing we thought of would not be, well, I'm going to quit my job. But that's some of what how our parents think, because they're not in that part of their brain. They're in what we call fight or flight. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. You know, one of the wonderful things about Vogel is how we provide services to our families and how we're able to do that. We take on a whole holistic approach to services. So if we don't have it in place, we could probably 9 times out of 10 put it in place because it's going to benefit our families. So, you know, anytime a parent, the families are enrolled in our services, they're able to have a licensed master level social worker that's assigned to them, that's available to them whenever they need them. They're required to meet with their social worker on a monthly basis, but they have access to them every day. In addition to that, and they're there for a crisis situation. If something should come up, they are there for them. In addition to that, we have our whole mental health unit, our whole mental health clinic, where we have licensed professional counselors and licensed therapists. We recently added to our programming a psychiatric nurse practitioner, which was huge for us. It was the missing link to our mental health services. So she's a part of our programming now. You know, and helping our parents to understand that, okay, your baby is okay in the classroom. Now let's focus on what mom needs to move the family forward. And then working with them on those goals of if they're looking for something else to do career-wise, if they wanted to find a job, because that's part of what we do is helping them find employment. But also, if they want to go back to school, we can provide all of that for them. We have our Parent Opportunity Center that offers career and educational goal setting and coaching and mentoring. We have a GED program at our center. So there's so many different things that we can do to help our families move from that point of crisis to stability to thriving, because that's our main goal, is to help them do that. And so we are just as supportive as to our families as we are to our children that are enrolled in our program.
So you talk about that we want to move our families from stability to crisis to thriving. Is that a linear journey?
It's more like spaghetti.
Yeah.
Looks a little like spaghetti.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of. Yes, yes. So I mean, it's not easy, but we're in it for the long haul to help our parents get to where they need to be. You know,
they're there to support them.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, you think you're on one path and you leave on Friday.
Absolutely.
The weekend happens and they come back to their customer manager and something's happened on the weekend that could set them back 3 steps.
Absolutely.
And we just meet them where they are and keep them moving forward.
Yes.
And we even have our grant program that we offer as part of the POC, our Parent Opportunity Center, because it's amazing, isn't it, that just a little bit of money can keep somebody moving forward.
Yes.
So a mom that, again, is not using the is in fight or flight, they're trying to survive. You know, they go in on a job interview and say, well, I need some, I didn't take the job because they said I needed black pants and black shoes and I don't have that. And we're like, we can buy that. Or the mom whose car broke down and for $8.33, we got it fixed because somebody left a cap off. And so it is just amazing how a little bit of money will just keep people moving forward versus taking them all the way back. Because if that mom loses her job, then it's just going to be another long time before she's ever going to get to stability. So it's really important. So I think that's also, we didn't talk a little bit about, though, the developmental services that we offer, because a lot of our kids, like you, we said, that they come to us delayed. Mm-hmm. And that's why we do that initial screening to see where they are developmentally. But we also, not only do we work with them where they are in the classroom, but we also provide on-site speech therapy, occupational and physical therapy. And one of the things we've recently seen is we don't think of COVID as trauma, but it was trauma for a lot of people. And we have had more kids needing speech therapy than ever before. Out of the 134 kids we have right now, I think 50 or so are actually in speech services. And when you talk to people, again, it goes back to the brain. And it goes back to how the brain develops language. And the brain has to hear the language And then it puts the language in your brain. That's why I speak English, you speak English, but other people speak another language because that's the language that they heard and it got put in their brain. And so, but what does that have to do with COVID? We lived with masks on for 2 years. And so if you were a little baby or a toddler and you needed to hear those sounds, you couldn't hear the sounds clearly from your mom and you couldn't also say them. And so therefore it's not wired right. And so we're having to go back and do that. And that's been an major thing that we've seen just as a result of COVID. The work we do at Vogel is extremely rewarding, but it's also extremely challenges. And you know, Kim and you and I have talked about this a lot when it comes to case managers and even teachers, Morgan, with the, it's not for the faint of heart. You don't really cut your wings or teeth at Vogel Alcove. It's really a very, it takes skill. It takes specialized training. And it really takes a very commitment to our mission. And even both of you have experienced this where we've tried to explain that to new hires and people in the interview process. And they think, oh, I can do this. And they couldn't do it. Doesn't mean they don't have skills. It just means they don't have the skills for Vogel Alcove. So, Morgan, will you talk a little bit about the kind of teachers that we have and what their backgrounds are and what extra training we give them and also how we help them cope with the trauma they're dealing with on a daily basis in the classroom?
Yes. So I really do take my time to interview potential candidates for our classroom. I'm very transparent as far as what they would be encountering on a daily basis, because everybody that comes in is like, oh, I want to work with homeless children. I want to be the savior. But then I have to bring them back down to reality in that it's hard. What we do is incredibly difficult. Secondary trauma is very real. So even if they don't realize they've had trauma in their past, it will bubble up to the surface when they're working in the classroom with our kids. And so I'm very transparent during the interview process. And then what I'm looking for in a candidate is someone that has the experience working with our community, either working with families that are homeless or under-resourced. I also look for candidates that have that classroom experience that organically we'll talk about how they build relationships with the kids, because that is exactly what we do. If I have a candidate come in and say, well, I'm very strict, I'm orderly, and classroom management is a priority for me, I'm thinking, okay, you may not be the right fit for our kids, because we need to meet them where they are. We have to be flexible. And some days your lesson plans are thrown out the window and you just have to provide love and cuddles for the day. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for that flexibility. I'm looking for that person that has that heart to be a part of this ministry that we have at Vogel. Some of the additional training that all of my educators and even family support goes through is action-based learning, which is brain-based science, using those gross motor skills to make those neural pathways connect. We do conscious discipline, which is also brain-based, using all three portions of your brain to help make them aware of their social-emotional learning. The pyramid model, which is that positive behavior intervention. We also did the poverty experience, which was just such an empowerful just experience for everyone on staff. It put us in our family's shoes to see what they experience on a daily basis. And that is just such a valuable experience that we had. And then the other training that they go through is handle with care. So that is just a little bit of some of the specific professional development that we do to help prepare our teachers for our classroom and working with our students.
Talk a little bit, though, about what you do for them.
One of the first things is the teacher tap out. Any teacher can call anyone on the admin team and say, I need a teacher tap out. No questions asked. We respond to the classroom and they leave the classroom for 15 minutes. They go in their car, take a walk, whatever they need to do for 15 minutes to get a reset, to deal with some of the emotions that may have bubbled up to the surface as they were teaching. And then they come back to finish out their day. in the classroom. We also have put into place a rapid response team. A teacher can call the admin team and say, I need rapid response. We go to the classroom, we peek in the window to see what we're dealing with, and we either take over the classroom so that the teacher can continue to work with the child that's having behaviors, or we, if the child is a danger to himself or others, we'll take control of the child and then the teacher can continue working with the other students. But those things we saw as a need and we put them into place to support our teaching staff. We also do reflective supervision, which is a coaching model for our teachers. We have an outside entity come in and it's basically just support for our teachers. They share some of their experiences and they get coached along the way. And we also do practice-based coaching for our teachers in that we help them set goals. We show them how to attain those goals. They practice and then we let them fly. So lots of support.
We actually add an extra position on the admin team just to do with interventions. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So our behavior intervention coordinator, Ms. Celeste, she is a child whisperer. Mm-hmm. Her master's degree is in working with challenging behaviors. And the strategies that she puts in place in the classroom or with a child that's hulking out, she literally will whisper to the child and you'll see a change in their behavior. She'll give them if-then choices. She always empowers the child to make a better choice and she'll say, if you pick up your toys, you can play with this. If you do this, then you can do that. And the children are responsive. They like to have decisions. They like to be empowered. And that's what we're teaching them, is how to be in control of their behavior and themselves so that they can have a better overall experience throughout the day.
So Kim, again, can you talk a little bit about our clinical family support staff and our play therapist and adult therapist? And you and I talk a lot about, because you understand all those letters, but a lot of them have to have all these letters behind their name. You know what they mean. I'm getting better at it. But talk a little bit about the staff that we hire on the family support side and why we hire what we do and what we do, how we work with that staff.
Yes, absolutely. You know, we've been fortunate that our staff, our clinical family support team and our mental health team has been a consistent team for quite some time now. So our clinical family support team, they are comprised of licensed master level social workers. Most of them have many years of experience in the field of social work. Because you cannot do this job coming out as a new social worker unless you've had the background and experience doing this work. But it takes a special person to be able to navigate through the families and the families that are enrolled in our program and dealing with some of the dynamics that go along with what the families bring to the program. So our clinical family support team is comprised of licensed master level social workers. Our mental health team is comprised of licensed clinical social workers and licensed professional counselors. We have, what do we have now? About two licensed professional counselors that are contractors for us, and then we have two full-time licensed professional counselors who are child play therapists for us. So their skill set is providing that play therapy for those kids that are enrolled in our program that are experiencing the trauma that comes along with being enrolled at our program. So we try to find the best candidates to work with our families and that come with the experience of knowing what it's like to work with homeless families or those families who are experiencing poverty. And knowing how to get to the level and provide the level of services that these families need, because it's different. It's not something that you can just pull from a book because you can't do that. That's what our mental health social team.
Talk a little bit about how they get supervised. So they do a one-on-one.
Absolutely. Yes, they do a one-on-one supervision with me weekly. We're bringing some other team members along because we've grown so. So we're splitting up the departments. We'll have a director of our mental health center and department and a director of our family support department. But they get one-on-one supervision with me. They also are involved in the teaching that takes place that we when we do staff development. They are helping with doing the trauma training. They pull all of that training together, and we do something differently every time we have training. But the trauma training is one of the major things that we do for our entire team, not just the teachers, but our entire team. So they are a part of that whole process.
And it's important because we have very skilled people in the world of early childhood, and we have very skilled people in the world of social work, and then we have skilled people in the world of counseling. And sometimes an issue will happen that the lens of early childhood doesn't necessarily agree with the lens of family support or clinical counseling, but we do something called quarterlies. And so we literally bring the team together. So can one of you or both of you just say something about how we bring that team together to actually work on one family or one child so that everybody knows what's going on?
Absolutely. So every quarter, the whole team, both family support, mental health, and early childhood come together, and we bring the data or the information for every single child. So they have had an opportunity to do their assessments. They've had an opportunity to fill out any concerns that they may have for the child. And they also have some progress notes because we celebrate the progress and growth for each of our children. And so we all get together as a team downstairs in room 111. And the teachers just report out child by child, and we take notes. And if there's concerns and we need to refer for additional services, we do that. If a child is being discharged from services, we celebrate that. But it gives everybody the opportunity to hear the same information at the same time, and we develop a plan right then and there for each of those children to move forward. And then at the next set of quarterlies, we report out, okay, did they get those services that they needed? Have they been getting pulled? And everybody is updated. So everybody is getting that same information, and we're on the same page for each and every child in the center.
Great. So, you know, in this episode, we've now taken the time to kind of break down the foundation of the work, like we talked about at the beginning, that Vogel does everything based on a foundation of trauma-responsive care. So we've talked about what trauma is. We've talked about how we respond. We've talked about the type of caregivers we actually have to have, and then how do we care for the caregivers? So we've really broken that down, and, you know, we say that one of the things is we wrap everything up in what Vogel does is we rewire brains, we repair hearts, and we restore families. And so as we close out today, though, you know, sometimes we can talk about the research, we can talk about the brain stuff and all of that, but what it really comes down to is the day-to-day, how did we implement this kid, this family, and where are they now? So, Morgan, would you take a little bit of time to just talk about, you know, a specific story about a child that has been impacted by our work and where you can see the outcomes of that? And then, Kim, if you'll do, after she finishes, if you'll do the same thing with a story for family, we will change the names to protect them. But if you would start with that and just kind of we'll end with some success stories about what we've seen.
Absolutely. So my little boy, I'm going to call him David. So this little boy came to us with severe trauma. He had a potty mouth on him. He knew how to use those cuss words, and he would say them every single day with emphasis to his teacher. And his teacher was like, oh, I don't know, Dr. Morgan. I don't know if I can have this. That one word is a trigger for me. And so I said, well, it's just a word. He's not hurting you. It's just a word. And he needs to say that for some reason. So we worked with this child day in and day out. He would take off his socks and shoes and throw them across the room. He would knock over the shelves. He would just have his hulking out moments every single day. But the teacher that was in that room loved him through it every single day and told him, I love you. I understand you're feeling frustrated. I understand that you're having a moment. It's okay. I'm going to sit here with you. Through that dedication and just sacrifice and love, this child learned that no matter what he did, that teacher was still going to be there and love him. So flash forward to him going to kindergarten. And we knew full well that he was going to have his moments in kindergarten. Well, the first day of kindergarten, they wanted to suspend him and couldn't figure out how to deal with or work with this child. So we got wind of it and we were like, oh, goodness sakes. You know, our heart goes out to him, goes out to his mother. She's struggling. That school reached out to Vogel and said, can we have a meeting? We want to know how you worked with David. We want to know how to reach this child like you did. So we did. We had a meeting with the administrators from that elementary school, and we talked about how we were able to reach him and his family and work with him. Well, they worked with him. They put him in a smaller classroom. They eventually moved him to a different school where he would just be in a smaller environment, and he's thriving. He is not suspended. He is not being expelled. They found out ways that we were working with him so that he would be successful. So that to me is what we do.
Absolutely.
Kim?
Wow. It is funny that this question has come about because I just ran into a parent last week that I had not seen. And she was so excited to see me. She's like, Miss Kim, look at my new car. Look at my new car. I got this job. She was just so excited to be able to share all the successes she's made in the 4 years that she's been with Vogel. So as she was driving off, I looked back at her and I said, wow, I remember when 4 years ago, the situation of how she became a client, a family at Vogel. And at that time she had two infant children, twins. Mom was suffering from a medical condition and she was running away from a domestic situation. Beaten down, you could tell, not really open to sharing and talking with her social worker, still pulling back a lot of layers with her. She finally, as we worked through the process and kind of identified, well, what is it that you want to do? How do we get you to the next step? And then working with her and her children as, I think having her children at Vogel and knowing that they were safe, then she could start working on her and the things that she needed to do. Because she had so many stressors going on, it kept her in and out of the hospital because of this medical condition that she had. Mm-hmm. But after some time of working with her social worker and opening up to her, them pulling together a plan, you know, getting her on the career path, you know, getting her resume together, because she had some previous skills, getting her connected to families, we finally started making some headway. And on top of that, I forgot the other piece, she ended up finding out she was pregnant with another child when mm-hmm. she came to Vogel. So just me standing back looking at her saying, wow, we all did this. Mm-hmm. And how excited she was to share that with me. It made me feel really good about, you know, we do this. This is the work that we do. So, but she was able to connect to a family that she hadn't spoken with in a long time. She ended up getting her own apartment herself. She bought another car. That's what she was showing me that day. And the kids are just thriving. And she ended up securing a better job. She has good employment now. So, and she got into counseling with our adult therapist. And she's doing so much better. She's not been in the hospital like she was having those issues because of all the stress she was going through. So it just make you feel really good that all this work that we do is not in vain.
No.
There is hope.
Well, I think one of the things that's interesting, some people may have seen in the newspaper last week, they just released, Housing Forward just released the new data for the point in time count. Kim and I actually participated in the point in time count. We were out there in January in the middle of the night counting people and interviewing people. But it is a process to go through to really get a trend for homelessness. And one of the things that they saw was that family homelessness was down 15%. Now, the one thing is that's one night in time. But as I mentioned, the problem with family homelessness is it's hidden. That wasn't counting. Those are the people that we encountered either in shelter or on the street, not necessarily the people doubled up or in homes or in their car if we didn't find them, or in a hotel day to day, because HUD doesn't define it that way. But the great thing is we look at that and look at that number of it's going down. A lot of times people think about Vogel and think, oh, well, those are the people that work with, they actually just work with the kids. Well, hopefully today they've seen that not only do we work with the kids, but we have a two-generational approach, and we also work with the families. And when I, you know, we kind of just kind of breeze over the statement I made at the beginning that said, you know, they all are homeless when they get here, but now 50% are housed. That didn't happen by accident. That didn't happen just because somebody else in the community did that. We did that. And I think we've got to celebrate those numbers too, because Vogel is helping those numbers for family homelessness go down. But also, the most important thing is that you can get a house, but if you don't wrap yourself around those families, just like we go back to COVID, and we look to see the ones that were in shelter were protected during COVID because they were locked down. The ones we had to serve daily were those moms that were stuck in their house with kids and couldn't get out to the grocery store, couldn't find the things that they needed. And so we had to wrap ourselves around those families and help them. And so we can't lose sight of that. The bigger picture in Dallas when it comes to homelessness is that Vogel makes a huge impact on that family homeless number. And to remind people that you won't see homeless kids on the street, most likely. I think they found 8. And I'm sure they were hidden. Because, and a lot of times people will ask me, well, I don't understand why there's homeless kids to begin with. So certainly they would be turned into CPS. Well, it's not a CPS offense to be homeless. It is a CPS to neglect and do those things. So if you had a child sleeping on the street, that would be considered neglect. But our families are doing the best they can, but yet they many times are hidden and people don't see. So family homelessness is a much larger problem across the country because people just don't, they equate it to chronic homelessness. They don't think about kids and children, and they don't, when they think about homelessness, people see a person holding a cardboard sign on the street corner or with a tent under an overpass. They never see the face of an infant, a toddler, or a preschool kid. And those are the children that we work with every single day. So thank you so much for being with me today, Dr. Morgan and Kim, and for joining me as we really kind of broke down what it is, the foundational work of Vogel Alcove as we looked at trauma. As I talk about Vogel to the community and give tours and those kind of things, people always ask me, how can you help? So some of you listening today may be thinking the same thing, want to get involved and know how to help. My first suggestion would be to go to our website, which is www.vogelalcove.org. And also you can look to find out how you can, we need financial donations. We're expanding, as I mentioned, so that means a bigger budget. So we need more money. We're in the middle of a spring campaign right now to raise another $500,000 for this year. So we certainly need your donations. We also can use in-kind donations. We've got summer camp coming up, and we need right now swimsuits, towels, everything you need to go swimming, because we take all our kids swimming, as well as spring and summer clothes. So you can always give in-kind donations, but then you can also volunteer. So you can go on there and fill out a form on the website if you're interested and coming down and volunteering at either one of our sites. So those are some of the ways that you can actually find out more about Vogel and get involved. I also encourage you to go to our Facebook page and our Instagram page, because you can also find out really what goes on every day at Vogel. So thank you again for joining us today on our very first podcast. We're very excited to start the Voices of Vogel. So that you can find out more about the impact we're making on the community each and every day. Our second installment will dig a little deeper. We will be talking to The voices we'll hear from then are the people that are actually doing the intervention work with our kids. And so we will focus on developmental services that we provide, as well as our social emotional services. We hope that you can come back, and we also hope that you will subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any of the episodes. And also you can rate this podcast and review it as well. So until next time.